Audio extracts from the book, The Sealers. The Return of the Gods, Elena Dunham. Foreword by Alex Collier. Foreword by Alex Collier. It is an honor to know such a human being as Elena Dunham. This looks like a book, but in truth it's an historical document. It takes humanity on an incredible journey from the beginning of advanced soul groups wandering the universe looking for a cause to the liberation and acknowledging of a humanity blessed and suppressed throughout the ages. This remarkable woman, who represents the feminine principle so fully, was so fitted to the times to present this remarkable work. It will be difficult to put this book down. It carries a frequency that is nothing short of epic. I could not be prouder of this work or the soul who tirelessly brings this forth to humanity, at a time that is paramount for the rediscovery of the human spirit and the journey back home to self-responsibility. Ladies and gentlemen, The Sealers by Elena Dunham. Introduction. A portal opened into an outstanding future for humanity of Earth. It is time we embrace with honesty the true awareness of who we are. We must let go of the shyness and the doubts, for we have way more potential than what we think. The matrix has fallen and we see now with better clarity, reclaiming our light. Here comes the beautiful dawn of consciousness for the humans of Earth. Many of you felt a change in my frequency since I met with the Sealers. It is true, and it couldn't have been otherwise. These types of experience are breathtaking. Life will never be the same anymore. Some said I have changed. In truth I haven't. I got instead closer to who I truly am. Meeting the Nine and the Sealers had a tremendously transformational effect upon me. It attuned me to my soul essence. From this moment, I fully acknowledged who I am, with the most profound honesty. When you reach this level, you embrace your power and your light, your frequency shifts to a higher level, and of course people perceive you as different. Some may even freak out as they do not understand, they do not recognize you, although you are even more yourself than before. It is similar to changing your perfume and animals don't recognize you anymore, so they can become aggressive. Although it is still you, only the frequency is different. I like this analogy because the star people refer to someone's frequency as a fragrance. This is how you are meant to evolve, not to change, but to get closer to your true nature. People do not have an aggressive response to a higher frequency, but they do to something they are not used to deal with, and that they do not dash yet understand. I believe that what may scare them is the inner, personal trigger that these new frequencies carry. In October 2021, I was made aware by Thor Han, my contact in the Galactic Federation of Worlds, that a huge intergalactic fleet had arrived in our solar system through a portal located behind Jupiter, and that this fleet would be stationed around the Jovian moon, Ganymede. I had never met with this entirely new group of aliens before, and it surely signified that great changes were on the way. Humanity of Earth had entered a moment in its history when time and space are understood for what they truly are. A great evil has left the planet and we can all feel the changes in the energies. It's in the air we breathe, in the beat of our hearts, it is all around us. Something that was once incredibly heavy and old has lifted. It is not there anymore. It is gone. A long time ago, visitors from other galaxies left on our planet some amazing gifts that would one day lift humanity to a new level of civilization and consciousness. This day has now come. These visitors are back. We are ready. The love that animates their heart has never failed us because they are our family. They are the 24 founders, the foremothers and the forefathers of humanity in this galaxy, and they are back to witness our blossoming. They are very proud of us because it wasn't an easy task for us down here, breaking the millennia of slavery and extracting the human races of terror from the claws of the darkest empires this galaxy has ever known. The Sealers are back and they want to meet us, and lift us into our legitimate and glorious future. They promised they would come back when we are ready to truly understand who they are, and it would seem that this moment has come. We've crossed the bridge to meet them halfway. My personal series of meetings with these beings of the Intergalactic Confederation lead to unexpected encounters with incorporeal, immortal, supernatural consciousnesses calling themselves the Nine. The 24 intergalactic cedar cultures relate to the Nine as a higher management and, Following their guidance, the Cedars are looking after the balance of life in the universe. For me, the contact with the Nine was life-changing, stirring my emotions on a very deep level, and it propelled my consciousness and my life into realms I never thought existed. This book relates all of my extraordinary, exhilarating off-world encounters and adventures with these new visitors, sharing with the public uncharted domains of reality. Since the Intergalactic Confederation showed up in our star system in October 2021, and at the same time a mysterious superconsciousness group named the Nine renewed contact as well, a tremendous effort was put in place by opposing dark forces to demonize the Nine Collective in a desperate attempt to discredit them by any means possible. The Deep State was terrified by the idea that people would come to realize who the Nine are, and how powerful they are. Standard psychological CIA tactics were employed. The most appalling and ridiculous attempts used the fact that Andrea Puharage, a paranormal researcher working with genuine psychic mediums such as Phyllis Schlemmer in experimental endeavor to contact the Nine, was approached by the CIA, who was interested in having a hold on his researches. Which is a much expected consequence to face when you start experimenting in such uncharted territories. In truth, when you dig into the facts, it is the nefarious agency who attempted to stop Dr. Puharich's researches, at several occasions and employing sometimes harsh means such as burning down his laboratory, or summoning him to enroll as a scientist in the U.S. Air Force in order to force him to enter a non-disclosure agreement. In a notebook found by his wife, Dr. Puharich wrote that the CIA offered that he work for them, but he declined, characterizing them as liars and unscrupulous people. I believe that the CIA and other secret organizations working at higher levels do not want the general public to know about the Nine or the existence of other positive and very powerful extraterrestrial entities. They knew that the day would come when the public would learn about the existence of higher off-world forces willing to protect and guide the Terrans, and that the Deep State would lose their grip on power. The fear scenario wouldn't work anymore. By twisting facts, the Deep State counterintelligence pathetically accused the Nine of being a CIA construct, and even more absurdly, a satanic cult, falsely naming them the Council of Nine. As soon as I announced that I was contacted by the Nine, these agents of evil set out to discredit me and those with whom I work, using these crumpled narratives. The same scenario unfolded in a wave of attacks as soon as I mentioned that I had met with Inky. It always astounds me how the human ego is capable of boldly constructing lies and selfishly mislead thousands of people, without any morals, just to feed their personal vanity. They may even be sometimes under the control of dark forces, which is a higher level in the game. In either case, wisdom never comes from a reactive emotional drive, and deceptive narratives never pass the test of time. Do you know how many councils of 7, 9, 12, 24, etc. are in existence just only on this planet alone, or in contact with it? It would resume like saying that all the apples on a tree are rotten because of only one bad fruit. I'm not here to justify or defend anything or anyone, and with your own personal discernment you can find a lot of documentation available on the internet about this topic, the serious, the ridiculous and the deceptive versions. I am here to tell the story of my own personal experience. I incarnated into a powerful shaman bloodline, inheriting as well from a French highly sacred bloodline that carries particular psychic abilities. Because my being is of a certain interstellar lineage, I am in a position to convey very intense experiences. I am only explaining this in order to put my story into context, as it is not about me. I am only the bridge. Hopefully, you will be able to finally understand, throughout this book, who the Nine truly are. I invite you to see through my eyes, hear through my ears and feel with my heart, but in the end the information is for you to discern for yourself. A few months before I started writing this book, a young, sweet and lovable girl reached out to me because she had been rescued by the same team who rescued me. It turned out that she had an MK-Ultra programming destined to take me down. Thanks to Vizeni from the Andromedan Council and Pleiadian Commander Adeana, the Trojan horse was exposed right in time and the door closed. Shortly after, When I first began working on this book, I was awakened one night with a feeling that someone was trying to reach out to me. I sat on my bed, realizing that all my protection shields were already up and at maximum strength, a response mechanism to unwanted intrusions into my energetic and mental fields. These protections are not only magical shields that I built myself, but also include a range of technological protection systems installed by Thorhan and Anax. Nothing that isn't vetted by my protectors can penetrate through this defense mechanism. Their own spaceships have an identical defense system, so I know that it is extremely efficient. I found myself inside a thick translucent protection bubble through which I could distinguish a 2 feet wide open portal floating about 3 feet ahead of me, 6 feet above the ground. The following words from my friend Stephen Kwa, a former super soldier at Area 51, echoed in my mind: "If you see them, they see you." This also works the other way around. If they can see you, you can see them. I could see what was happening on the other side of this portal. A man in his 40s sat at a desk, staring at a computer screen. He was wearing a short-sleeve light brown shirt and a black tie. His hair was black, very neatly cut, and strangely shiny as if combed with gel. The hairstyle was not of a modern fashion. I am not sure if he was from this present time or from the past. I had a strong, sharp knowing that he was CIA personnel attempting to remote view me. I even intercepted his intention. He was trying to know what I was writing about at the time. I could understand only recently, regarding the very precisely targeted attacks I have been victim of, that this remote viewing operation was meant to set up which counter-narrative they were going to prepare. My burst of anger activated a psychic defensive response, and a burning ball of plasma flew back at him through the open pathway. The portal imploded instantly, and I actually felt sorry for this guy. Then my shields switched back to normal. This particular defense technology is widely used among all advanced galactic civilizations. It is also known to the CIA, who worked on developing such anti-remote viewing shielding. All of the ships from the Galactic Federation of Worlds, the Council of Five, the Andromedan ships, and even the enemy are equipped with these types of protective shields. I cannot reveal the complete mechanism, but I can say that it involves a holographic layer that makes remote viewers see only what they are allowed or tricked into seeing. These high-level holograms can sometimes feel very real. Just imagine, for a moment, how insane it would be to easily remote view enemy structures and know their plans, and even find out about how to blow up their ships. This shielding technology is therefore essential. I am glad to say that the protections I possess are out of this world. A few months before this book was published, in the spring of 2022, I was driven into a well-wrapped trap to get me to sign a non-disclosure agreement, give away all rights on my material for perpetuity and non-revocable, and consent to not gather any more with other contactees and experiences for any conference on the matter of extraterrestrial existence. The elites and organizations behind this attempt were deeply rooted into the dark. I stepped back in time, not without exhaustion and a bit of fright. For these people, if you are not with them, you are against them. Thankfully, I am well guided and protected. As soon as I managed to pull out of this trap by legal procedure, another agent suddenly appeared on the stage, out of nowhere, all over the internet, obvious follow-up to the remote viewing attempt, trying to know what I was writing about. At the time of this remote viewing attempt, I was wondering what the CIA could have done if they had found out about the full content of my next book, which is meant to annoy a lot of powerful people, obviously. The behavior of this new agent confirmed my understanding of what was going on. Trained in deception, he countered with a harsh determination every single point I had mentioned publicly that would feature in this book. He was on a mission for sure, and the agenda was clear. Ardeana, High Commander in the Galactic Federation of Worlds, forbade me to talk any further about the content of the book until it is published. And the birds of prey eventually starved and flew away. So time has come. Here is the truth unveiled. Elena Danon, Sept 21, 2022. The Return of the Gods. On a night in September 2021, A blast of energy filled the bedroom with an astounding and powerful presence, whose consciousness carried such a power that the invisible pressure nearly cracked the walls, as if a tornado had entered the room. My chest felt compressed by the sudden density of the air. Sitting up on my bed and catching my breath, my heart raced and my blood pulsed loudly in my ears. Very strangely, I was suddenly aware of the blood running through the veins in my body with a fizzy feeling. My blood, there was something about my blood, and his blood, a strange, powerful, memory resonance. I am father. I looked up into the blazing light, my eyes feeling like if they were burnt by his brightness. I could distinguish a shape, a silhouette, a tall, very tall humanoid entity hovering above the ground. I am back. Magnificent. He was magnificent, not only his physical aspect, but also his glorious power and radiant wisdom. Immortal. He was an immortal. I could now see him better as my eyes adjusted and attuned to his vibration. He measured about 9 feet tall and he was slender, wearing a metallic skin-tight suit. His bald skull was elongated at the back of his head. His eyes were slanted glowing garnets with clear crystal silver pupils. He looked timeless. His lips didn't move. He was communicating telepathically with me. His words resonated in my head with a deep and grave timbre. "Who are you?" I asked. "I am Enki. Enki, the Anunnaki lord who tried to save Earthlings from slavery. Appearing again at a time when humanity of Earth is fighting their final combat to free themselves from servitude." His overpowering presence spoke for words. He showed me visions of times gone by on Earth, crawling primates in the face of the gods, elongated metallic ships descending on a Garden of Eden in a scattering blast of wind, bending trees and lifting soil. I saw cities built overnight and mining works stripping the earth in a bleeding dust. Gold, the greed of the gods. Now these gods are back. Why? And why was Enki now appearing to me? The heat rose in the room as two impressive wings of fire unfolded on either side of Enki's shoulders, wrapping around me in a shielding ring of plasma. Enki appearing with his wings of plasma. "I will protect you in your mission. I am the father of your kind. I have come to see my children setting themselves free. This is the time when my children rise." His wings of fire weren't proper wings but protuberances of plasma coming out of his body. More exactly from his upper back, between his shoulder blades. He gave me some word to say, in his language, whenever I needed to invoke his protection around me. Since then, it has proven effective. Every time I pronounce the verbal idiom, a ball of fire forms in my back and develops into a shield, consuming any attacks aimed at me. At the moment when I understood Enki's gift, I also understood that I would need this protection as things were about to get rough and I would soon be attacked by yet unknown sources. Since this first encounter with Enki, in early September 2021, hidden enemies and new adversaries revealed themselves to me, whose minds scattered like broken pieces of a mirror on a shield of fire. No one, however, could stop me from taking part in what was about to unfold. This was just preparing the ground. I have had the opportunity to use Enki's personal spell to protect myself on a few other occasions, and it always works wonders. This spell can only be given by Enki and I cannot pass it on to others. Those who are instructed in magic know this fundamental rule well. It wouldn't work as a magical gift if it could be passed on. I always feel Enki's powerful energy around me. It comforts me in my work and it strengthens my determination and resilience. The day after my contact with Enki, I requested a follow-up discussion with Thorhan or Anax. They both responded together. Anax wasn't far, so he visited Thorhan on the battle station. The communication with them occurred through my incorruptible implant device, relayed through Thorhan. I could see and hear Anax beside him, as I always have a short peripheral vision when we communicate via the device. It is always a breath of fresh air to see my favorite Igaroth and I would have loved to have been there with them upstairs, on the ship, that day, to simply have a hug. I was emotionally dazed because Enki was the last thing I expected would be happening to me. This contact experience was impressive at the time, not suspecting in any ways that more astounding events would occur later on. Of course, Anax and Thorhan knew already everything about my peculiar encounter. "You are privileged to meet with Inki," remarked Thorhan. "Is it about the work I do?" I asked. "For sure. You are not the only one to be protected by Inki and his people. Many who work at liberating humanity from the claws of the Nebu receive his protection. The enemy is raising power as we are reaching the final act of this long war, while our allies are approaching the borders of this star system." "Who is coming?" I asked. "I know the Negamak answered the call from the Federation. But now the Anunnaki are back as well?" "Only EA's faction, who goes by the name of Inki," Thorhan said. "I heard Inki's name means Master of the Earth?" "Yes, this is correct. EA means in Anak, Master of the Fluids. In Terran vocabulary it may be translated as geneticist." "It makes sense. Anak is their language?" "Yes. Inki and his unit left Terra in defeat a very long time ago, when their military leader, remembered by the name of Inlilant who had a different agendas, took over the management of this planet. Prince EA always wanted to upgrade the early seeds of humans on Terra in order to study what potential they could develop. But Inlil wasn't a scientist. He was the lead commander of the Anunnaki forces and he had an important mission to complete, to create a hybrid slave race. Hoping that they could come back one day, Prince EA and his group took with them a precious sample of the original Terran Hu DNA. They are bringing it back now, to repair the damages inflicted by the altering operations of the enemy on the Terran human genome. Such as the recent bioweapons? For instance, yes. Those who have been injected with the bioweapon will be able to reintegrate a clear, original DNA. The DNA codes Inki is bringing back are from the original macromolecule. This is very important. The original Terran Hu genetic marker was very strong, healthy and resistant, quasi-unaltered. It will be used in the healing and repairing process with holographic medical technologies. The genetics of the Terran human species were lately considerably altered by the Nebu throughout their hybridization program. The ancient original codes shall repair this genetic alteration and reverse the damages. "Is the Anunnaki group of Inlil still on Terra?" I asked. "They indeed left a faction there. It was a long time ago, though. How could Inki be still alive? They are immortals. They clone themselves to benefit from an everlasting life, jumping from body to body, avoiding the process of reincarnation. I can feel your emotion. Why are you scared?" "I am not scared. He was just very impressive. And it's Inki. Didn't I teach you that we are all equals in the consciousness of Source? Salute with respect but never bow. No fear shall be in your heart," intervened Anax. "You are greatly protected and guided. There are no teachers but beings sharing the wisdom they acquired with experience and the knowledge they have learned with time. Inki tried to free the humans of Terra because he loved them. He gifted many of them with his own blood. Inki has compassion. That's what makes him different. He will walk with you and with the others from the army of Terra. For the great time is near, when a dark enemy leaves this planet. Your star system was won back, and now many are coming to assist in the victory of your people, to watch with pride and love as the Terrans graduate, and to help them settle a stable and prosperous future timeline. Not only these Anunnaki are back, but also others who will manifest soon." Anax had this slight corner smile that I knew well, meaning, "I won't tell you because it's a surprise." So I didn't insist. Processing my encounter with Inki was enough for one day. Jump in forth. The Catch, September 30, 2021. Thorhan surprised me with a telepathic communication to share with me some events that occurred earlier that day. Standing in a room with dimmed lights, in the company of other personnel from the Galactic Federation of Worlds, Thorhan was looking at a set of vertical transparent cylinders measuring about 10 feet high, filled with a sort of bluish gel. A strange atmosphere was filling the room. These big pods were placed in a semicircle and each one of them was connected to the ceiling by flexible tubes. 9 of them each contained a tall gray in stasis. What a staggering vision. I recognize the long-nosed Aban prostheses allowing them to breathe in the Earth's atmosphere, although I had never seen one in person before. I knew that the Aban are at the head of the Orion Nebu group, and they are also the ones responsible for the treaties with MJ-12 and the military-industrial complex. In this room, I could also identify the High Command Radeana, the Science Commander Danetha, several Amites and other personnel of different races. This scene was taking place in the military science department on board Thorhan's battleship. These are Aban, a rare and exceptional catch, Thorhan confirmed to me. It is extremely difficult to catch them as they play games with frequency shifts, interdimensional jumps and temporal hide-and-seek games. And when we happen to catch one, it disembodies instantly. Either that they escape, or either that they are terminated remotely by the Hive. As you know, we recently found the frequency to lock all of the portals in this star system, so no one can escape. This is how we caught these ones. They were trying to escape via one of the portals near Saturn. It is a great catch for the Galactic Federation because, for the first time, we are about to triangulate their brain frequency in an attempt to neutralize the frequency transmission from their queen consciousness, and get to it. As you know, the Nebu function as a hive consciousness, and for the first time in the history of this galaxy, we are going to crack this code. These ones won't stay here on this ship, they are about to be transported to a safer place. Why are they kept in the darkness? I asked. They thrive on ultraviolet light. Our regular light harms them, we need to preserve them alive. This is probably why we never see them in daylight. All of the Nebu are trying to leave this system, Thorhan said. May have left already, hoping to gather forces and come back. Here comes the urge for deactivating the frequency linking to their central consciousness. Once disconnected from it, they will be useless, neutralized. To better dive into the Hive, we first need to travel to the Orion Nebula M42, 1500 light-years away of course. If you ever had the technology to do that, do not go there. When you look at the Orion constellation in the night sky, the M42 nebula is located in the center of the lower part, below the belt. As it is occurring sometimes, due to the implosion of a star, it is not uncommon that a singularity appears inside of the nebula, with a coronal mass ejection. These do not create a gravitational distortion in the space continuum, however, so they are not exactly black holes but are in fact stargates. Something needs to be precised about this particular portal. It is a double inverted vortex creating such an intense dimensional distortion, that it becomes a time machine. So whoever owns it becomes extremely powerful. Jumping forward. Within this nebula, where rich clouds of gas allow an active stellar formation, exists an open cluster of four massive young stars surrounded by a myriads of tiny others, unleashing strong ultraviolet radiations. Since reptiloid greys thrive on ultraviolet light, the Nebu chose this particular place to be the heart of their empire and the headquarters of the corporate alliance of the six, Nebu, Reptilian Collective, Zeta Reticuli Grey Collective, Vela Caeli Tokert, Cygnus Solipsi and Megopaymatra. Around the star systems of Rigel and Betelgeuse are the Nebu Heavy Artillery Military Headquarters. And in the Trapezium Nebula Cluster, also named Kabar, you have the Cube, the political center where the Hive Queen dwells. The name Nebu in their common language means the Masters or the Dominion, and it only refers to the tall greys residing in the Orion Zone. Among them we find the Betelgeuse Ibans, master geneticists, slave manufacturers and rulers of the Hive, the Bellatrix Indigutx, extremely violent, and the Mintaka Grails. Rigel is truly the central place where the major part of their armed contingents and their military headquarters are located, at the difference of the M42 Nebula, which is the center of the Hive consciousness and the place where decisions are made in high instances. The Nebu enslaved several races of small greys from different star systems throughout the galaxy, but they tend to exploit primarily the enslaved greys from Zeta Reticuli. This is how we find very often small greys serving tall greys, be it in abduction scenarios on board ships, or in classified military zones and underground facilities.